Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Ron is not here today. He's still trying for that last spot in the Paralympics, so he's out practice shooting.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the host of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking about mental health with Casey Hirsch. Casey is a licensed clinical social worker, competitive international Latin ballroom dancer, of which I am very envious, author, and the founder of LightYourSparkle.life. Her book, pending publication, explores the connections between illness, trauma, attachment, and resiliency. Hello, Casey. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And yeah, Casey, my mom desperately wants to learn how to dance.
Yes.
Oh, it's great.
It's been a lifelong wish, but I just don't think I can do it.
Don't do that.
Just go. Go do it.
All right. I could see my mom, out there now.
Right.
I'm happy to sign her up. Hi, Casey. What actually inspired you to pursue a degree and a career in social work?
Well, I have to say it was not a direct route. I had many twists and turns in my process of getting there. I grew up in a small rural community with limited resources, and I focused on academics as a way to feel like I could be something and get out of there. And I had really great teachers who helped me get scholarships into college. So I went to UC Davis, and as an undergrad, I chose a degree in business because it's the only degree that I knew of. It's the only degree that we talked about in my small community. Go into business and you can do anything you want. Well, I realized I was helping people with their problems, and people were coming to me with their problems when I was in the business field. So I took a step back and I realized, when I was a young child in my community, because there was just such a limited number of extracurricular activities, I volunteered a lot in community service. And I enjoyed helping people with the Soroptimist and Halloween carnivals and food drives and through my church programs. And really, I was doing social work even as a young child. So it all made sense. I had a really rough childhood. There was domestic violence in my home. My parents went through a really terrible high-conflict divorce. And on top of all that, I also struggled with chronic childhood illness since I was one. And I was really miserable. It was easy to lose hope and feel like there wasn't a way out. But I had these amazing connections with people in my life, from church, teachers, eventually a holistic healer and a psychologist, and I learned that support and relationships can make a huge difference in a person's life. So I chose social work because I knew that if I could be one person in someone's life that gave someone hope and made them feel less alone, I could truly make a difference, and that felt really good to me. Social work embodies a systems approach, which is something that's really important to me because it means that you really see the whole person for who they are and try to understand them in the context of their environment. And it also emphasizes advocacy and empowerment, which is also important to me because you can really advocate and help empower people who feel like they don't have the resources or they didn't grow up with what they needed to do, what they really believed they wanted to do. So I love social work. I'm just so proud to say I'm a social worker.
Right. Well, that's great. Great. And I understand that you also had experience being a patient with the Crohn's disease. Is that since you were 1 year old?
So I wasn't diagnosed with Crohn's disease until I was 30.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But I did have just numerous illnesses and infections since I was one, and it took a very long time to figure out what was going on. And in reality, my immune system was just being attacked and beat in so many ways from that 1 year age up until eventually we figured out, okay, I have Crohn's disease, but it was many diagnoses, many, many interactions with physicians, in and out of specialists. I mean, in some ways, I say I feel like I'm an expert in being sick,
sure,
which is not something that I feel good about saying, but it's true. I've been most of my life all over the country, seeing different specialists, getting all the different labels that go along with, okay, maybe she has this, maybe she has that, and trying approaches and different modalities to figure out what's wrong and how to help me get better.
Okay. And we've never discussed Crohn's disease before. Could you please tell our listeners what Crohn's disease is?
Absolutely. So it's considered a chronic inflammatory bowel disease, and that means it's characterized by inflammation of the gastrointestinal tract, or the gut, uh-huh, or the GI.
Okay.
And it's considered an autoimmune disease. Typically, it affects the small intestine, though it can affect any part of the gut. Now, the exact cause isn't known, though evidence shows there's some combination of genetics, the environment, and an overactive immune system. For people who haven't experienced much with Crohn's disease or don't know what it is, it's important to understand the immune system a bit.
Okay.
The immune system is designed to protect us from foreign invaders, bacteria and virus. So if you imagine if you're bit by a bee and you get a, you know, the sting, you can see on your arm a visible red. It'll get swollen. That's
sure.
inflammation,
sure.
which is what happens when our body is attacked. It's a natural immune response. You can see that. But with Crohn's disease, this inflammation, this red and raw state, is inside the intestine.
Okay.
Not visible. You can't
right.
see it, but it's still there, and it's going on repeatedly, so there's little reprieve for the intestines to heal. In autoimmune, the body's immune system attacks parts of the body that are not dangerous and are healthy tissues.
Right.
Conventional medicine says that there isn't a known cure. I really try not to focus on that because the body is capable of incredible things. And there are many options for treating Crohn's disease and living a quality life.
Okay.
So I focus on how to pursue those
and
trust that there's a lot we don't know.
Right. And having a positive attitude is very often
a
healing effect in itself. What kind of symptoms would a person with Crohn's have?
Symptoms can be reserved to the gut, but they can also expand to other parts of the body, the joints, eyes, urinary tract. There are, however, common symptoms that most people with Crohn's disease report: reoccurring diarrhea, rectal bleeding, unexplained weight loss, fever, fistulas, abdominal pain and cramping, fatigue, anemia. People with Crohn's disease describe having remissions and relapses. So there are times when you might feel like you're okay and you're going through your day less miserable than maybe on a day when you have a relapse or a flare. And these flares can be really violent. It just depends on the circumstances of the flare.
Mm-hmm.
The frustrating part is that usually it's hard to figure out the reasons for the remissions and the relapses. I know that for myself, there are times when, say, for example, the holidays,
mm-hmm.
if I'm really stressed during the holidays, it's almost predictable that I'm going to have some type of flare. But the rest of the time, it's very random.
Okay.
Symptoms are really individual.
Sure.
No two people will usually have the same symptoms. In my case, I have a lot of pain from spasms in my small intestine, anemia, and low energy. but I've been able to maintain my weight with healthy diet, supplements, and ballroom dancing, which might be very different from another person's experience of Crohn's disease.
Of course. And how has your experience with chronic illness affected or influenced your career?
It's influenced it a lot. The lens I see the world is through having chronic illness. You can't help but not look at the world that way. And it's really important. I have to catch myself often that I don't take on the patient's identity and that I don't become the illness, because it's really easy to do that when you've had so much of it throughout your lifetime. On the other hand, having dealt with illness since I was a child, I really understand the emotional, social, and physical ramifications of illness. There were times I lost hope and was told I would never get better, even that I might lose part of my intestines, which fortunately I haven't. But I found strength and resources around me and realized that healing from Crohn's disease really does take a team. And as a social worker, I get to be part of this team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's, my career, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really great to be part of that team. I need a team myself, and I also can be part of a team for other people. My career has been focused on helping others identify their own healing resources, helping them expand options, empowerment, more important, connecting the dots of their own lives, which is essential for healing. When you have Crohn's disease, it's exhausting. And just going through the day without trying to have to also educate yourself on how to get better, it's a lot. Sure. The more we share our knowledge and experiences, not only do we feel less alone, but we learn new things we can try to help us cope.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what our whole podcast is about.
Right.
Yeah. It's so true. It's why I was also inspired to be on it, because you're exactly right. It's what you're doing. Sharing information.
And empowering
I'm
others.
Passionate about building a community that empowers us as experts in our own bodies. The way to do that is to get educated. I really hope that I can make things a little bit easier for others. I don't want them to go through what I went through trying to find my way through illness and a very complicated medical system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, as someone, you know, I myself have dealt with chronic illness, and so has my mother. It's not easy. No matter how you look at it, it's not easy. But what are some of the ways that you have treated your own Crohn's disease, or that you've found helpful, and how do you live with it day to day, and what techniques or innovations or treatments have you tried, and how have they been effective?
That's a show in and of itself,
I bet. Absolutely.
That's true.
And we'll refer people to your website as well to learn more about you and everything, because, yeah, it's a lot to try to cover in one question. Sorry.
But I definitely have some things to say about that. When I was a child until my mid-20s, the only approach that my family and I knew is conventional medicine. At the time in the 80s, which is still common that physicians treat symptoms with antibiotics, but in the 80s, there wasn't a lot known about the gut microbiome and the impact of too many antibiotics on the system. Every time I had an illness, infection, the doctor would prescribe me an antibiotic, and that was a way to treat the symptoms, but also as a way to figure out what was wrong with me. So by my 20s, I had been on hundreds of antibiotics.
Oh, wow.
It's a lot. I didn't get better. In fact, I was getting worse. Over time, I learned about holistic approaches to illness. I changed my diet, started taking supplements, saw a licensed mental health therapist, made changes in my environment. I had immediate improvements.
Okay.
Oh, fantastic.
Over time, I began to transition to an integrative treatment model that includes functional medicine, and many approaches to healing that are alternative.
Okay.
So some of these include Nambujirpa's allergy elimination technique, biomagnetism. I've really spent a lot of time in the field of energy medicine.
Like Reiki?
Reiki, absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, I learned Reiki and got certified in it myself so I could do self-treatment as well as seeing a Reiki practitioner.
Okay.
Energy medicine is very broad, and Reiki is just one of many, many approaches that are fantastic. Sensory motor psychotherapy is an approach for dealing with trauma that's been very useful. And ballroom dancing is critical for me. In my list of things I've done that have helped me heal, I rank ballroom dancing as very, very high. But by and large, the most important thing is I've opened my mind to limitless possibilities for healing. And when people ask me, oh, have you tried this technique or take a look at this, I'm open-minded to the potential for that to help me. And sometimes it's the things that we're most unfamiliar with that are the things that can help us the most.
Sure.
Well, that's great that you're open to that. You know, a lot of people might not be. Mm-hmm. I think I am.
Well, I will say that I know the first time my mom tried meditation, I did not think it was going to work because she's the kind of person that you can't get to sit still for more than 10 seconds. But she absolutely loved it and felt a significant difference from that first session. So, and now we're going to have to set her up for ballroom dancing.
Right, and I also enjoyed the sensations after the Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Casey, we've spoken with several other guests that have explained how early childhood trauma can affect health over the course of your lifetime. And I understand that you have found this as well?
Absolutely. that's an understatement for sure.
Okay.
Personally, there's a definite connection when I look at my life between childhood trauma and how the disease process evolved in my body.
Okay.
My mom, when I was a little girl, my mom kept a diary and she would document. I had so many appointments with physicians and I was on so many different medications. My mom kept a date book and she recorded what type of test I had, what diagnosis I had for that particular week, what antibiotic I was on.
Wow.
And so she had this record of these visits with physicians and my history.
Mm-hmm.
As an adult, I was obviously in the mental health field and trauma weaves in and out of my work.
Mm-hmm.
I also was dealing with my own chronic illness and at that time had been diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And I wanted to know what happened to me? I really want to understand through myself. Are there any pieces of information from my history that will help me know which direction to go to get better?
Okay.
I took all that information. I put it on a spreadsheet because I'm just like that. I had to try to notice trends, and I was blown away with how many times in my life there was a huge stressor or a traumatic event. And then I ended up with, say, migraines or tachycardia. I had this time in my life where my heart was beating really fast. It was very irregular and fast, mm-hmm. and no one knew what was going on with me. Well, these incidents of physical symptoms were right around the time, say, the divorce was happening or other stressors.
Okay.
That was really, eye-opening for me. I would never look at any health problem as a clinician and personally without exploring one's life history.
Sure.
Our history and experiences influence who we are and also how our body responds to the environment and social relationships. There was a famous study that some people might be familiar with called the ACEs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Not only have I experienced this professionally, but the research is very clear that there is a connection between adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, and health in later life. ACEs can include physical, emotional, sexual abuse, neglect, loss of a parent, which includes divorce, domestic violence. These are just some of the ACEs. The more ACEs you have, the more adverse childhood experiences, the higher the risk for illness and mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. We often don't think about when there's a trauma, our body protects itself from the threat by mobilizing its resources with something called fight or flight. Mm-hmm. It's part of survival, just like in the animal kingdom.
Right.
As humans, when anything is perceived as a threat and makes us feel helpless and vulnerable, our brain and body are cataloging the sensations, the memories, the feelings. So events that happen in the future will trigger the same fight or flight response, even if they're not the same event that happened in the childhood.
Okay.
When we're in a fight or flight response, our body's focused on survival.
Right.
The stress hormones are released, and these stress hormones cause inflammation and certainly contribute to a cycle of illness.
Okay. Sure. Right. That's how I understood it as well, that the trauma and the fight or flight reflex that your body goes through can cause heart disease later in life, for instance.
Anything that your body is
reacting to it.
And we do have a great deal of research links on our Pinterest page for that as well.
Finding this more and more.
Right. I think we're just learning about it more and more as well. And like you said, you treat the person, you know, as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I think that's vital as well. And Casey, your experience with Crohn's and early childhood trauma resulted in your integration and your work as a social worker. And then you, can you tell us more about how you deal with, you know, like the person as in their entirety, and how you encompass all of those different aspects into your work?
Yes, it's part of it is me figuring out how to apply these different elements in my work, but I've learned how to do that and find ways to manage it through being a patient.
Okay, sure.
As a patient, I see what it's like to go see a doctor and then go see a therapist and then have both of them not talk to each other or reference the set of symptoms I'm having in each of their disciplines, much like going to see someone for an earache and the ear, nose, and throat specialist says one thing, but they're not going to necessarily look at how your ear is connected to another part of your body.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very fragmented. As a patient and as a professional, when we go see physicians, we often give them the power to be the experts on our own bodies. They're the ones that have the education. They're the ones that have all this experience and background that we don't credit ourselves for. What we forget, however, is no one knows our bodies better than we do.
Right.
Empowerment is a really important part of being able to see yourself as an expert on your own body enough to show up in your own team. And also to be able to know your body well enough that you can be a resource to your physicians and healers. So empowerment is first. I like to say that people have to develop that confidence to feel empowered before they're able to step in and help the system integrate itself. So in the mental health profession, we often see that there's a physical illness that can bring on mental health symptoms, but the mental health symptoms can also cause the physical problems.
Right.
And most physicians treat the symptoms and aren't trained to talk about emotions and life history. So the integration comes from how do you view the whole person? And this has inspired me to find ways to help others and myself through education and my role as a social worker to understand that there really is a connection between the two. To make sense of it, I developed the healing wheel, which is comprised of what I believe are the essential components to healing that include the emotional, the physical, and passion. Passion is very important because these are the things that give us joy, the things that are already part of our daily lives, whether it be music, ballroom dance, pet companionship, fitness, art, just whatever it is that really you feel joy and you live for. They offer health benefits that need to be considered equal to everything else in our lives. And the healing wheel has been one way to depict all of this and help people see that there are many different parts working together. Many different pieces come together to lay a foundation for disease.
Right.
Do you work with a certain age group as a social worker, or do you cover any age?
So in my history, I focused on working with teenagers.
Okay.
And that was children's history and trauma, childhood trauma. Now in my career, I enjoy working with all ages, but especially adults, because adults are the ones who are taking their children to see the doctors. They're the ones who are in that more proactive role, especially when they have a child with illness or they're dealing with it themselves. And they are the ones that are most accessible for the education at this point in time. I hope that changes.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be great for this to become a thing where we teach children in schools that you are many parts, and that would be fantastic. But so right now it's more of an education role that I serve. And of course, anybody who wants that education is going to approach me and going to be part of the process.
Sure. And can you tell our listeners about the resiliency of healing and what exactly is Light Your Sparkle?
Light Your Sparkle, yes. Get asked that a lot. Where did you come up with Light Your Sparkle?
Uh-huh.
Well, back when I was in my master's program, I worked in a community that had been really hit with suicides and substance abuse overdoses greater than the national average. There was a lot of research going on to find out what happened and what was going to help bring the community back. And they adopted something called the 40 Developmental Assets by the Search Institute. It's a model that describes what helps communities become more resilient, which is that ability to adapt and recover when faced with adversity. They found there were certain elements of communities and individuals' lives that helped people become more resilient. I like to think of resiliency as the strengths that we all have in our lives. Sometimes we lose sight of who we are, especially when there's trauma and stress and when we've lived with chronic illness. But even when we think we don't have resiliency, there are others around us who know that we do. They're there to remind us of what we're made of. And when you lose who you are, or maybe you never got to know yourself because your life was built around meeting the needs and approval of others, which we all so often do, it becomes very hard to heal.
Mm-hmm.
I chose the name Light Your Sparkle because, one, it's really fun in the ballroom dance community because the clothes, everything is very sparkly.
Oh, okay.
And it's an idea, a metaphor for how you feel seen and how you derive your confidence as you sparkle.
Okay.
But that's just a fun kind of inside part for me. The bigger picture is that Light Your Sparkle reminds me of my power and my purpose.
Okay.
When you light your sparkle, it's about finding who you are and growing it, connecting to those things that make you feel like, yeah, this is me. It's about lighting the sparkle of hope inside you, the energy that describes your essence. If we light our sparkle, we become our most valuable resource. Within us, we already have the wisdom that we need to live the life that we want. I like to help people light their sparkles. I also need people and things in my life to help me light mine.
Okay.
I think we all do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this something that you think we're both, Jean and I are both military veterans. Do you think that this is something that could be used in the veterans arena with people that have PTSD or people that are, you know, having other mental conflicts that they might have lost whatever it is that they thought was within them when they came home from.
Well, I think also that the fact that you lose a sense of a person of self when you're transitioning
home.
Out of the military,
right.
And into a VA system. Yeah.
Yeah, I do, because I actually worked for a small period of time with combat veterans and the PTSD. And when they came back from having been in Iraq, your identity, when you go into the military, your identity, you have to have your identity cultivated around the mission.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you stay focused. Your identity has to be focused.
Right.
You are very loyal to your group, to your team, and to the mission. And that focus is what helps you survive. But a lot of times then, of course, when you retire from the military, you're done with your mission, you look at yourself and you don't know. There's a lot of grief and loss because you don't know who you are, and you've stepped away from something that gave you so much purpose. And that's a really hard place to be. And I think that people, when you don't know who you are and you haven't had a chance to really just get in there and know what feels good to you because you've had tasks to perform and you've had a thing you've got to get this done. Sometimes you don't have that focus on who you are. This is a lifelong process. When we're not part of ourselves and we don't sense ourselves and we're not comfortable with who we are, these are all things that create imbalance in the body and the mind and the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely helping veterans light their sparkles is fantastic. Everybody can benefit from that for sure.
Yeah, I think we're gonna put some focus on the veterans community with this episode too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely direct a lot of it that way.
Right.
Casey, what tips, hints, helpful advice do you have for our listeners in regards to overall mental health and everything, and what can we do and what resources are available to us?
There's a lot of great resources available. I think it's important for people to remember to not lose hope.
Okay.
It's so important to help people get connected with resources that make their path so clear. Just like we were talking about with veterans, the more we can reach out
mm-hmm.
and offer resources and education and hope, it doesn't get any better than that. Forming an integrative team includes doctors and therapists, family, friends, healers, pets, teachers, nutritionists, church groups. The list is endless for what comprises an individual's integrative team.
Mm-hmm.
We often just need help in pulling those parts together or even recognizing what's available to us on our team. A lot of people may not even think a pet companion, a dance teacher.
Sure.
How are they part of my healing? There are great books and resources available. Of course, people can use my website.
Okay.
Obviously, your podcast, an excellent, excellent resource. There are specific therapies that if people are interested, they can explore. One of which is, two actually that are used for treating trauma.
Okay.
One is called sensory motor psychotherapy,
mm-hmm.
and the other is called EMDR,
mm-hmm.
also known as eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. There's a doctor by the name of Veronique Mead. She has done an excellent job of integrating the research on trauma and chronic illness. She has a website, chronicillnesstraumastudies.com. Really helpful to be able to go to one website where there's a lot of information
Sure. In
one place.
Right, right.
There is a trauma center of Boston, traumacenter.net. Again, excellent resource for trauma, how these connections happen. For those who like to read, there's a book called The Body Keeps a Score by Bessel van der Kolk. This book really changed my life. When I read it, it was definitely an aha moment for me. another book by Dr. Emron Meyer. It's the first book. It's called The Mind-Gut Connection. It's the first book that I read that really showed how our emotions are mirrored in our gut, how our gut has contractions in response to our emotional state, and how our brain and our gut are connected. I can give you a few more if
sure.
you want me to.
Yes,
sure.
What we do is on my list. Yes, yeah. What we do is we have a resource page for each guest on our website. And on that resource page, I list as many as you would like.
Right, and because we'll make this sure way we have links there as well.
Right, this way it's a good place for people to go and get all the information they need about this episode.
Right, we also have a mental health Pinterest board, and we'll make sure that we include these resources there.
Right.
And then we do have a special board just for books.
Yes.
And so
great.
We'll have links there as well.
So go ahead, continue on.
Yes, feel free.
Excellent, and I'm happy to elaborate on any of these if there's any interest in that. There's a podcast called Therapy Chat. It's ran by Laura Reagan, LCSWC. She's interviewed a number of experts on the topic of mental health, trauma, and illness.
Yeah, we subscribe.
Yes.
We subscribe to that one, yeah.
Yes.
Great. I found it not to only be helpful for me as a therapist, but also helpful for non-therapists.
Yeah, because we're not therapists and we enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I know. You take the parts that are applicable to you and then you say, I don't really want all that other stuff, but I'll take this part.
Right, right.
So there's a website for the Nambudrapaz allergy elimination technique that I mentioned earlier. That's called NAET.com. I encourage people to open their mind and go look at that website and read about it and see if there's any connection that they might feel to that. There's also a book that was written by Dr. Devi, and it talks about how our allergies, it's about allergies, but a deeper understanding of how our body gets very overly reactive and ways to use the alternative technique to calm the system down and help strengthen the immune system.
Okay. What is that book called?
So Dr. Devi has a book called Say Goodbye to Illness.
Say Goodbye to Illness, okay.
And the website is NAET.com.
Okay, I got that one. All right.
How can our listeners learn more about you, the work that you're doing, and how can they learn how to light their sparkle?
Yeah, they can take a look at my website, www.lightyoursparkle.life. They can subscribe to my newsletter, my YouTube channel. Feel free to write me if they have questions or suggestions, because this is an evolving, growing field. I love hearing from people. As you mentioned earlier, I'm writing a book that ties together a lot of what we talked about today through my personal story.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know when, do you have an estimated publication date for that yet?
Not right now.
Okay.
I hope soon.
We'll yes. watch for it.
Yes, we will not only cheer you on, but we'll be sure to get a copy.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I try to keep including articles. I've published articles in diverse venues to try to cover these different topics. And mm-hmm. so those are on my blog. I also have a section on my website that separates the physical. It's not intended to separate, but just for ease of getting the information, there's a physical, emotional, and passion section, and there's articles that are written by other professionals that talk about how these categories can be very diverse and how we all have these parts of ourselves that need to be integrated into our healing approach.
Sure. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've enjoyed reading your blog as well.
Thank you very much, Casey, for joining our show today.
Yes, it was a pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or mental health condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard in this podcast.
Till next week.